Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. Just how radical is Tim Walz, the new running mate for Kamala Harris? Well, we've been writing an awful lot about that at Hot Air, but they've also been writing about it an awful lot over at the Daily Caller, one of the fine publications in the conservative media, and one that you should be reading as well as you're reading Hot Air. And joining us right now is Caitlin Richardson. She's a contributor at the Daily Caller, and she's here to discuss Tim Walz's record. And there's lots to discuss, Caitlin.
There is. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you. This is the first time that we've had a chance to talk. And so I lived in Minnesota for 23 years, and that includes the first 3 years of the Walz regime, which is how I'm going to refer to it from now on, Caitlin. So I'm familiar with much of the record. I am actually not familiar with what Walz's first executive action is, and that's what you're talking about in your piece at the Daily Caller today.
Yeah, his first executive action, which I guess, as you just said, is not as well known as the rest of his record, was creating this diversity and inclusion and equity committee back in 2019, right after he took office. This was the first thing he did using his executive power, was to create this committee. And I think this was important to highlight because it is setting the tone for the rest of his time in office. What he said when he created this committee was that it would ensure the lens of equity is used to focus all state actions. And this is something that he carried through the rest of his time as governor.
You know, Caitlin, I mean, and I think that this is important because there's been a lot of discussion about DEI initiatives, right? And it's been, I would say that this is something that's become pretty ripe recently, because I think for a long time, the pushback from the left whenever you tried to bring this up would be, well, what's wrong with diversity? What's wrong with equity? What's wrong with inclusion? And this is part of the PR effort of the left to take basically what is discrimination and repackage it into pretty language. And that's exactly what Walz was doing here with his Minnesota Council on Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity. It's the DEI committee here.
Right. It's kind of a Trojan horse, these three words that sound really nice when you put them together, but it's a lot of the ideas and policies that are being pushed through using this are obviously not what we might expect on face value. Something that came out of this committee later on, actually, there was another committee he created in 2021. These two committees together worked for a long-range plan on how to implement DEI in the state government. And some of these policies included like state mandated trainings for employees. Other things that they addressed are hiring, contracts. So they're taking this framework and applying it to so many different aspects of the government. And I think that's something that people should be aware of, especially now that he's on the presidential ticket.
Do you have any insight into how these things played out in terms of actual outcomes, in terms of policies, in terms of how people were actually treated as a basis of Walz's council?
From looking into it, I've seen that it impacted, as I just said, some trainings for state employees. It looked like contracts, grants, those kind of things. It was a factor right in. It's especially important considering Kamala Harris's position on this now. Obviously, if you look back, remember in 2020 campaign, she put out that video talking about equity being, meaning that we all end up in the same place. This is a broader push by both of them. And now adding Walz to this ticket is just another indication that she's going, you know, harder in this direction.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know, and look, I mean, I can tell you that this has been, this preceded Walz in some very key ways. I think it was in 2009, there was an effort at the University of Minnesota to require people who were going into the education program, so, you know, the teacher's program, basically, right? And again, Walz was a teacher, so this is, I think, part of this, but the effort was that you had to basically confess your privilege. You had to go through sort of like the struggle session to admit your crimes against diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it sounds like this is something similar. By the way, in 2009, when that got exposed, and FIRE, which is the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, great group, discovered it, they sort of embarrassed the University of Minnesota into withdrawing the requirement to pledge these things for people going into its education program. My guess is that it never really ended. They just ended the formal version of this. But I mean, I think you can see this, the same type of thing, only being applied outside of education formation at the University of Minnesota. They're actually applying it now, thanks to Waltz, on employment within the state government, employment in terms of government contractors. And that's sort of what you're seeing in the outcomes of this, correct?
Yeah, that's definitely the intention of putting this committee in place, is to, you know, work for those kind of outcomes across the state government. The employee trainings, the employees are asked to think about what their role is in addressing systemic racism in the state government, like how their specific job factors into that goal. So it is, it's all across.
Right. Their efforts. I mean, it's the struggle session, right? This is in you know, in terms of, you know, the you know, Cultural Revolution in China and other places, this would be called struggle sessions, right? Where you have to get up and admit that, you know, your complicity in whatever violation of groupthink that there is, and pray that, you know, you don't have to wear the shame long before they let you go back to do your job, right? I mean, it's a forced compliance type of measure. It's forced compliance with a groupthink, and this has a long history, and history is pretty bad when on these types of things.
Yeah, it's not just Waltz, as you mentioned. There's so many universities, other government leaders have implemented very similar kinds of proposals. It's something across the board. It's an interesting place right now, the DEI efforts, especially after the Supreme Court ruling on affirmative action last year. Just the landscape is a little bit changing on that a little more broadly, but definitely, as you're saying, it has a long history.
Well, yeah, it's got a long history, and it was already underway, I think, even when Waltz came into office. It was sort of the social justice flavor du jour. You know, CRT and DEI, these things kind of go hand in hand, and it was already in educational curricula, I should say, in Minnesota. It's been baked into the cake for a very long time. And I think the thing to remember about Minnesota, especially where Waltz's power base is at in the Twin Cities, it's a huge college town. And it's not just the University of Minnesota, although they are huge. They have huge footprints inside the Twin Cities. But there's McAllister, McAllister College, which is a very well-known, very progressive school. It's very influential. Kofi Annan was one of their graduates, the former, you know, UN Secretary General. All sorts of different, it's very much academia driven. It's very much an academia bubble there. And that includes within the state government in St. Paul. And so it is one reason why Waltz, to get to the position of being governor, really had to abandon his supposed moderation as a red district moderate Democrat and really embrace the left. And as you are saying, that was really from day one. I mean, he started to deliver that on day one.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned that the demographics that made him shift that, because now what the campaign is doing is trying to spin him as this Midwestern dad who's, you know, more folksy, moderate, which when you look at his record, not just this, but across the board, as you also mentioned earlier, COVID policies, George Floyd protests, like everything,
right.
His record across the board is very much more far left than I think.
Well, Yeah. And Caitlin, I mean, we could talk about the DEI Council in terms of what happened in the George Floyd riots, because this was just about a year, maybe a year and a half, I guess, or just slightly under a year and a half before the before, you know, George Floyd's death and the riots that ensued. And Tim Walz hesitated to call in the National Guard. And then even after he'd activated the National Guard, hesitated to order them to intervene to stop the riots. Right. It took them 5 days to order that. And he said at the time that he had sympathy for the rioters and that he didn't think that it was a proper use of the National Guard to create order on the streets, which is, in fact, the only reason why you call it that, and natural disasters are the only two reasons that you call out the National Guard in the first place. And in both cases, it's to create order on the streets. And so, I mean, I think that this, what this shows, and I want to get your reaction to this, is that he wasn't just posing as a guy on the radical left when he got into office in 2019 after winning in 2018. He actually was a guy on the left, and the pose was more or less him being a moderate Democrat when he was in Minnesota's first congressional district.
That seems right. Just, you know, looking at his record, this committee came in 2019, and then you had riots in 2020, and we saw his response to that. So I think, yeah, that record bears that out.
So I'm not sure if you've spent much time in Minnesota. Have you?
No.
Well, I was there for 23 years. And actually, it's a very nice place. I mean, I was just about to make a bunch of jokes about Minnesota. Just don't go there from like November to about May. Right. But it's a very nice place. And people are very nice there. We lived there for 23 years and there are lots of good people. But what you find out and what I found out is that they're willing to throw everything under the bus to support this DEI. And that includes the entire city of Minneapolis, which they let burn for 5 days. And I think that this is a very revealing episode as sort of a prelude to what happened in 2020 and why the leadership was so incompetent. And it's, first off, it's a competence issue, and there's no doubt about that, but it's also an ideological issue, is that they just simply don't want to do their jobs, which is to maintain peace and order on the streets and to enforce the law. They don't want to do that. They just want to spend time on DEI stuff and let all the rest of the stuff collapse. And I think that that's going to be a problem, I think, for the ticket. Once this initial honeymoon bubble of, you know, the picks and the convention are over.
Right. There's some clash there ideologically, and it is concerning. I think people should be looking closely at it.
All right, Caitlin. So I know that we don't have too much time here, but I do want to give you an opportunity to tell people how they can find you on the social media stuff and, you know, what you got coming up next at Daily Caller or elsewhere. So, you know, tell us how we can find you.
Yeah, you can find me. I'm on Twitter at Kate S. Richardson. You can find my work on the Daily Caller News Foundation, and I cover primarily the courts and legal issues, do some investigative work as well. So yeah, you can check me out there.
Interesting. Well, I hope that when you have some investigative work, you'll let us know. We can talk more about that in the future too.
All right, I will.
Caitlin Richardson, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.